Journey to Topaz by Yoshiko Yoshida. Chapter 2. The Long Wait. Page 11. The clock on the mantel ticked noisily in the silence of the living room. The fire had died down, leaving only the charred remains of an oak log, but Yuki didn't feel like blowing it back to life. She couldn't settle down to read a book or go to her room to listen to the radio. The house simply didn't feel right with three strange men standing guard over them and sending away friends who came to call. Yuki wished Ken would come home. Was he still studying at the library, not even aware of what had happened? Yuki wandered listlessly into the kitchen, where Mother was now frosting her chocolate cake. She had put a kettle of water on to boil and set out her tea tray on the breakfast room table. "Who's the tea for?" Yuki asked curiously. "Who's coming?" Mother always prepared tea when she was expecting visitors. In fact, even if the callers were unexpected, she served a pot of fragrant green tea and whatever sweets she had in the lacquered bowl in the cupboard. Anyone who came to their house and stayed for more than 10 minutes was always served tea. Even the real silk hosiery woman with her bulging bag full of silk underwear and stocking samples. "No one is coming, Yuki-chan," Mother answered quietly.
"Then who's the tea for?"
"For the policeman and the gentleman from the FBI."
"You're going to give them tea and cake?" Yuki asked, dumbfounded.
"They're not even friends," she objected. "They took Papa away. Why should you give them any tea?"
Mother quickly brushed aside Yuki's objections. "If we're going to spend the rest of the afternoon with them," she said firmly, "we might just as well be pleasant. After all, they're only doing their duty. We needn't be rude." Yuki could see that Mother had already made up her mind, and there was no use arguing with her. She could be very determined when she wanted to. That was probably why she hadn't the courage to come all alone from Japan. That was probably why she'd had the courage to come all alone from Japan 20 years ago to marry her father, whom she had known only for a short time.
"My professors at college knew us both and recommended your father most highly," she had explained once, when Yuki asked if she hadn't been worried. That was all she needed. She had come with faith and trust in her heart, and she had never been sorry.
Yuki sighed and picked up the tea tray, carrying it into the living room, as she usually did when they had guests. Mother would bring the teapot and the cake and do the serving. The policemen came from their posts and sat down awkwardly on the couch as Mother invited them to have some tea. Page 13. Yuki knew they were embarrassed, but they also seemed a little pleased. They relaxed and smiled, and as Yuki sat eating sweet mouthfuls of chocolate cake, she could no longer scowl at them. Mother knew it was difficult to have tea and cake with someone and still be unfriendly. Her gentle manner and warm smile, in fact, quickly defrosted anyone who came to their home, even the most haughty or arrogant. Yuki was sure Mother didn't have a single enemy in the whole world, although the rest of them, even Father, had at least one or two. Each time a car went by, Yuki hurried to the window to see if Father had come back or if Ken had gotten a ride home from someone. As the afternoon wore on and it began to grow dark, Yuki grew more and more uneasy. She jumped when the telephone rang once more, but this time it was a call for the policeman, informing them that they could leave their posts. They soon went off, leaving only the FBI man to keep watch. Yuki decided that the FBI had somehow found Ken and taken him off somewhere, too, when at last he came home. Mother quickly took him to the kitchen, taking only a moment to introduce him to the FBI men. She wanted to explain things to him quietly and calmly, so he wouldn't get upset or let his temper flare.
"And Dad still hasn't come back?" Ken asked, when Mother told him all that had happened.
Mother shook her head.
"They didn't even tell us where they were taking him," she said, and for the first time she let her anxiety show.
"There were two policemen here, too," Yuki added. "They wouldn't let anybody in to see us, and they only left a while ago."
Top of 14.
Ken looked troubled.
"It's really serious, then," he said somberly, and he got up to turn on the radio once more. "We heard some vague rumors at the library, but everybody just thought it was some fanatic doing something crazy. That's why I stayed to finish cramming for my exams."
Seeing the troubled expression on Ken's face, Yuki began to feel apprehensive.
If this meant that the United States and Japan were at war, what was going to happen then? Mother and father were Asai, first-generation Japanese. They were as law-abiding and loyal as any American, Yuki knew, but they had never been able to become citizens because of a law that wouldn't permit them to. Ken seemed to be mulling over the same thought. He said something new about mother and dad becoming enemy aliens, as if this really was a war.
That's silly, Yuki scoffed. Just because they can't become citizens doesn't mean they're suddenly enemies now.
Even as she spoke, however, she felt touched by a shadow of fear. What would the FBI do to father if he was an enemy alien? Yuki wished he would hurry and come home. The telephone shrilled into their anxious thoughts. The FBI man answered it, had a brief conversation, and then knocked on the kitchen door.
"I've had orders to go back to headquarters," he explained. "I'll be leaving now."
"What about my father?" Ken asked. "When will he be released?" The man shook his head.
"I just don't know," he answered. "I really can't even hazard a guess."
Mother went to the door with him and bowed as she would to any departing guest. Page 15. The FBI man paused as though he wanted to say something friendly, but he didn't know quite what to say. "I hope everything will be all right for you," he said briefly, and then he was gone. The house suddenly seemed empty and lonely, and Yuki flicked on the lights to scatter the gloom. "Put the porch light on, too, Yuki-chan," Mother reminded her. "Father may be back soon." No one felt hungry, but Mother put supper on the table. Each time the telephone rang, Mother or Ken hurried to answer it, hoping it might be Father. But each time it was only an anxious friend. "Mrs. Ito says that Mr. Ito was taken, too," Mother explained after the last call. "He was head of the Japanese Association in Oakland." It now became clear that the FBI was rounding up all the leaders of the Japanese community. When Ken called his classmate, Jim Harai, he discovered that Jim's father had been taken as well. Mr. Harai was manager of one of the Japanese banks in San Francisco. "Looks like the FBI has a long list," Ken said dismally. Now that the telephone was no longer monitored, it rang endlessly. Many of their Caucasian friends called to ask if they were all right. Mimi's mother phoned to ask if there was anything she could do, and Mrs. Jameson called from across the street, becoming indignant and angry when she learned that father had been taken by the FBI. "Why, he's the finest gentleman I know," she said, firmly. "How dare they take him off?" Just like that. But they had indeed, and now it was almost 11 o'clock. Page 16. And still he hadn't returned, or even been permitted to call them. Mother forgot to remind Yuki about going to bed, so Yuki stayed up, blinking back the sleep that threatened, feeling tired and sad and empty inside. Finally, Mother spoke to her. "There's nothing you can do to help Father by staying up," she said. "Now run along to bed. Ken and I will wait up a little longer." Yuki crept into her cold bed, but discovered that she was no longer sleepy. She curled up into a small ball, trying to warm her icy feet, and felt the thumping of her heart. All around, the night seemed dark and ominous and full of unfriendly sounds. A siren whined eerily down the street, and Yuki wondered if it was the police rounding up more Japanese men. She could hear the foghorns droning drearily over the bay, and felt glad to be safe in her own bed, and not lost in some small boat floating in the foggy night. She heard the distant, dull thud of an explosion, and wondered if it could be a cannon. Had the war come to California? Suppose Japanese planes bombed Pearl Harbor and bombed San Francisco and Berkeley. Yuki shivered at the horrible thought and wiggled down deep in her bed. She heard the sound of a car slowing down near their house. Papa's back, she thought happily. Yuki leaped out of bed and ran barefoot into the living room to find Mother and Ken already at the door. Mother turned away disappointed. "It wasn't Papa-san after all," she said. She left the screen door unlatched and checked the porch light once more. "I can't sleep," Yuki said dismally. Mother looked tired and worn. She still wore the apron she had put on to do the supper dishes, and Yuki knew she had given no thought to going to bed. Page 17.
"Well, let's all have some cake and hot chocolate, then," she said. She was a believer in the solace of food, and she seemed glad of something to do. Ken's books were spread out over the dining room table, but he closed them and stacked them on his binder. "It's no use," he said. "I quit. Come on, Yuki, let's go have some food. Go put on your bathrobe and slippers." Ordinarily, Yuki disliked being told what to do by her brother. "Just because you're bigger and older doesn't mean you can boss me around," she sometimes said to him. If he was in a good mood, he'd laugh at her and tell her to get moving. But if he felt mean, sometimes he would just put a big hand at the back of her neck as though she were a basketball to be dribbled down the court and marched off to her room. Ken was tall and strong, and he was the star forward on the Japanese student club basketball team. If he wanted to make Yuki march, he could, whether she screamed or scratched or even tried to bite. Tonight he was strong, but there was a gentleness in his voice that made it seem all right for him to tell her what to do. It was the way Father spoke to her. Everyone acknowledged the fact that Father was head of the house and listened with respect when he spoke. He had been in America 4 years longer than Mother, but he was proud of his heritage. He was the grandson of a samurai, and he behaved like one. He was brave and dignified, and behind his strength was a gentle heart. Mother still had many Japanese ways, too. Every year on the 3rd of March, she put out all her Japanese dolls for Dolls Festival Day. She put sweet cakes in front of Grandmother's photographs on her Memorial Day, and she still sat in the back seat of page 18. The car instead of in front besides Father. She was a gentle Japanese lady, but she also had a strong and noble spirit. Yuki was surprised at how hungry she was and remembered that she hadn't eaten very much supper. Her piece of chocolate cake disappeared even before Mother sat down, and Yuki felt hungrier than ever. "What else is there?" she asked. "I'm starved." Mother sliced some bread and got out some butter and homemade apricot jam. Ken said he felt like having some scrambled eggs and even offered to make them himself. They felt a little better after they'd eaten, but they were all still worried about Father. "I do hope he has a good supper wherever he is," Mother said softly. And then they lapsed into silence, for no one had any cheerful words to offer, and no one had the heart to voice the fears that were clamoring inside.